This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, well, we'll wait and hear back from Nick, and I've emailed the other voting members to see if we might be able to make a last plea to get one more, because if we get one more attendee, then we would be at quorum to be able to vote on the topic at hand, which the conversation today is about the University Hearing and Review Board. I wanted to speak a little bit more in detail about that. And then, as I noted, if we have some time, we could speak a little bit about what our next steps are in regards to Ryan Lombardi's visit on April 30th. So why don't we start with the University Hearing Board piece. So I spoke to the Astute University Assembly last week, kind of updating on where we were at and kind of the next steps and giving them an understanding of what we needed to work on. So I figured I would do the same here. And I have a sort of proposed idea that I would welcome input on and ideas. It seemed to be pretty well received from the University Assembly perspective. They appreciated the information, but I think it's important for all of you to weigh in on kind of what I'm considering and what you all, your input is as far as how we move forward. So the University Hearing and Review Board, for those who aren't as familiar, is a group of students, staff, and faculty who are interviewed and apply for the positions to hear cases that pertain to the code of conduct, which will soon be the student code of conduct. And they currently under the current code of conduct, they hear cases and they make decisions. It's a very, very impactful group of people who volunteer their time to do this work and to ensure that the code of conduct as it is written is upheld, and that the cases brought forth are heard and reviewed, hearings and reviews, right, effectively, and ensuring that we have a just and fair decision for the students involved in these cases and anyone involved in these cases. So it's a really major impact to the university as a whole. The University Assembly and the CJC, speaking historically, have always gone through a process whereby this around this time we would begin to do a call for applicants. Gina and the Assembly's team have a communication plan in which they would put out here's what it means, here's how much we appreciate you, it's great work, thank you, and a really concerted communication plan to ask for applicants. As you all know, we have a new code of conduct coming up, the student code of conduct that will begin in the fall. So it adds some sort of complications that we need to speak to how we want to address. The first thing I'll say is that this is a gray area, and the gray area that we are working in is understood by myself, by the University Assembly as we spoke to it, and by the offices, the OJA, so they understand kind of there's this piece we need to figure out. What is that gray area? That gray area is the fact that we are going to, in essence, usher in a new code of conduct in the fall semester. We have a current group of university UHRB members who are set to have an appointment ending May 31st of this year. They've been at it since June 1st of 2020, and they would have completed in 2019. So they would have completed a 2-year appointment in May 31st of 2021. Now, some of those may have been folks that came in a little later. There might've been some shuffles and things, but in general, you get the gist. There was a 2-year appointment that the timeline is ended on, and those folks may, if they choose to, decide to apply for a secondary position if they were to choose to, but in essence, all of those folks would become, their term would end. We have a second group of UHRB members who would be there, who have been in the appointment since the June of last year. It may have been a little later, I'm fuzzy on the details, but it was sort of it kind of happened quickly, and there was a need to get them on board. And they've been practicing in the UHRB now, and their appointment is scheduled to terminate at this time as of May 31st, 2021. Now, they will have only completed what would, in essence, be a one-year portion of what is typically a two-year term. Okay, is that, might I pause there and make sure everyone has a good understanding? If you have any questions, if I have explained that effectively for folks as to what we have currently standing. We good? Thumbs up there? Okay. All right, so now we have to look forward. We have to look beyond May 31st, 2021. And how do we do that? So what I've devised as a potential option that I want your feedback, and Nick has responded. He said after about 5:10, he would be able to join. Nick has heard this spiel, if you will, at the university assembly meeting. So he understands sort of the projection. So this gives us an opportunity to kind of catch everyone here up to speed on it, and then perhaps have Nick come in and we could get quorum and vote on it. That'd be great if that works out that way. So, all right, so then let me just text him back and let him know that 5:10 seems to be, that would be a good time frame. Okay, so now beyond May 31st, 2021, as we look to fall semester, we usher in the new code of conduct, the new student code of conduct. The proposal that I feel, and this is again my own personal feelings, and I welcome opinions and any opposition or support, however it may be, of this, would be that the current cohort of UHRB members who are only now, you know, 9-10 months into a 24-month available appointment, we could make that appointment and usher it forward to May 31st of 2022, extend it to the full term of their appointment. And what that group would then, in essence, be able to do is oversee and hear all cases under the current code of conduct as it currently stands. Because beyond August, September, there will be cases that will be heard that have happened now and through the rest of the semester. In the current circumstances, the caseload has gotten somewhat larger for the OJA and everyone involved. This is on a probably esteemed as well. You know, the caseload is a little bit heavy, so there is a known expectation that they will not be able to get through all cases by the time the student code of conduct comes into place, and there will be cases that may be heard not even until, you know, the following, the spring semester of 22, because students may take a leave of absence and not be able to have their cases reviewed until they return. A lot of scenarios. So this cohort really effectively kind of stays in place as they currently are and manages all the casework that comes in now and up until the student code of conduct comes into place. And then everything that is a backlog from that would be processed through this group. And then we have the opportunity. So is that kind of clear to folks understand that perspective? And then now we have sort of next wave is the need to fill a new UHRB. And what I mean by that is we're currently operating under the current code of conduct. So we would operate it in our solicitation for applicants, our application process, our review process, exactly as it is currently been happening. And as in doing so, we'd acknowledge to those who did apply for the positions that their appointments would be effective as of some time frame. You know, we could make it June 1st, but really, in essence, the idea is that when the new student code of conduct comes in, this would be the cohort that would oversee and hear all of the cases that come in under the new student code of conduct. And in essence, it would require a little bit of patience on their side to understand that we don't yet know how the training will go and how the communication will go and how you will be involved in coming up to speed with this new student code of conduct. And that will take a little bit of work on the VP's office and how they would manage that effectively with all the constituent groups. But that they would, in essence, be applying to do what the UHRB does, is to hear cases as it pertains to code of conduct. it would be a new one that's coming in that not all the pieces are solidified on. But then that group would really focus on anything that comes in the new cases. What works well about this particular idea in my perspective is that it keeps a foundation of people able to keep the backlog able to be worked through. And it gives an opportunity to bring in a new cohort that has time, in essence, because you got to think, if the new student code of conduct happens on August 15th, just throwing a date, you don't expect there to be 25 cases in the first 5 days. Let's hope not, right? So it gives them an opportunity to get sort of trained and up to speed in a window and a grace period where they can get brought up to understanding the new student code of conduct before cases begin to get processed, because, you know, it's still going to require that these backlog of cases get worked through. And we all know what happens when there's a backlog of cases. The new case doesn't get ushered to the top of the pile. It goes to the bottom, right? We understand that. It's basic logistics. So I think it gives us an opportunity to maintain and ensure that we keep continuity in the UHRB, and then provides an opportunity to get the group up to speed on the new code of conduct, because let's be honest, we all need a little bit of that, right? Like, as you look at the two pieces, like, what's the difference? What's that? Susanna and the groups there, like, you need to like time to look at that, and everyone needs to understand it, as well as the OJA and understanding those things. So why don't I pause there and ask for folks if they have questions, thoughts, ideas, feedback on kind of that initial, on my, again, my opinion and my perception. And I ask all of you to feel comfortable and providing feedback.
I just have a question, Brandon, and it's really only because I got distracted at the very beginning of your presentation. So in terms of the group that would be continuing, I didn't quite catch whether we're talking about just the people who continuing who would have had just the 1 year appointment, or is it broader than that? Would it also include people who are finishing their 2 year?
Thank you, Risa. It would just apply to those who we would be extending their 1 year appointment into a full 2 year appointment, and those ending their 2 year appointment would end their appointment. And perhaps Gina could clarify, if you finish a 2 year appointment, are you able to reapply for another 2 year, or is there an expectation that you finish that?
You can certainly reapply. Yeah, I think many people have.
Okay. So in essence, we could see that group kind of shift, and they would actually get a little bit of a vacation, if you will, from the UHRB, and that they wouldn't have to hear any cases for a little while as they got up to speed on the new ones.
I mean, I think this sounds like a great idea. It's got the benefits of being straightforward, you know, and it seems to cover, just as you said, you know, all the bases for the right reasons. So you said you got some feedback from, what was it, the executive committee of the university assembly, or the university assembly more broadly, or?
So I spoke directly with Logan, and this proposal that I put forth has Logan's support. And then, so she asked that I present the idea to the UA last week. And so I spoke to the UA, and I can take the lack of feedback as a general support. I think there was a couple of comments that were actually in support of it, but I did not hear any opposition to that from the University Assembly perspective. Susanna, I would appreciate, and not to put you on the spot, hearing kind of your perspective and kind of, you know, working with the casework. And, you know, I think it'd be good for us to understand if you feel this encapsulates and covers the need, or if there's something that we're not considering.
Yeah, I think that there certainly is a need to have some sort of stopgap measure in between. So I think extending the board that would already be going into their second year, I think that's a great idea. I am wondering, and I'm not sure if you mentioned it and I just missed it, how long they would stay on for the whole year until May of 2022?
That would be my proposal, would be to extend it that far. Yeah,
I think that's great. I mean, I think that I still am not entirely sure how they're going to do jurisdiction when it comes to like cases they're hearing, like things that happen now that go to hearing, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now.
Yeah.
I think that's still unclear, but I think this certainly covers, I think the proposal is great. I think that's enough time where the cases that would be under this current code would be heard, because hearings don't happen quickly, typically. So it's good to have that there's going to be some sort of board that's familiar with the old code in this interim. Are there any other questions I can answer that would be helpful? But I think this is a great proposal personally. Yeah.
Okay, good. And I realize I've always said your name is Susanna, but I haven't asked if that's correct pronunciation. Is it Susanna or Susanna?
It's Susanna.
I apologize. But
Susanna is fine. You know, just don't call me late to dinner.
There you go. My apologies for that. And thanks for clarifying. And I appreciate your perspective there. I think it's important for us to understand, because I am no expert in this field and I'm just trying to, you know, use my my staffing brain to figure out, you know, how to staff all the events is kind of my world. And this is kind of how it played out in my head.
So I do have a question about, and you may have already looked into this, in terms of the actual people who would be at, I assume you're talking about asking them, would they continue? Are there some people who are graduating? I mean, do we know if the actual bodies, you know, of the actual people are available? And of course, you don't know if they'll say yes, even if they are available, is that right? And what are the numbers we're talking about? And I know that we've talked about this before, but I can never remember.
Yes, that's a good question, and I can pull that up. So to answer your question, no, we have not definitively confirmed that every one of those who are currently in their position would be available. And so it will be contingent upon their acceptance of it. As it currently stands, we have in this group, we are at 30, around 29 members of the current of the, these are the folks that would be, pending full, appointment in essence, would be 29. And keeping in mind that when hearing reviews and Susanna, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's the number is five members of a hearing.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So even if we fell a little shy of that 29 number, I think, if we kept it above the 20 mark, that gives enough of a threshold for the group to ensure they're able to. And I think this is one of those things that, I'm not familiar with how they would communicate if there was a gap and we kind of just, the vacancies just happened and we weren't necessarily aware of them. So that might be something to make sure we keep note of, with the fact that we are kind of moving this group forward and may not be like replenishing it in its normal kind of standard, because we kind of are starting this new cohort. So that'd be something for us to just make sure we would keep an ear on. So that's a great point, Risa, ensuring that we would this group, one, be willing to, so we'd have to do that ask. And two, would it in essence get us enough people to maintain the need for the members?
Yeah, I was thinking in particular of students, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if somebody's gonna graduate, that's so much for that person. So yeah.
And maybe Gina, if you might be able to help here, perhaps is, in the event that there was a current need, is there a process by which you can do a kind of quick fill, like, oh, we have a few vacancies, we need to ask for some more positions to be filled? Has that happened in the past?
It has, both formally and informally. The informal process usually was over the summer, when the students wouldn't be there, and if there was a need to put together a panel, we would get students, whether they were student tour guides or students that happen to be, that we could identify. And then the formal process is there have been alternates selected. When a full cohort is selected, folks that didn't quite meet the rubric ranking, but were, within, they were close, would be added to the resolution as, if you need to fill some vacancies, here are some that may be available. they were never really, they're sort of like alternate jurors. You know, you might not ever serve, but you could if you were called on.
Okay. That's good to know. And do we know if that list from this past process exists and who would maintain that list?
That's the list that you have. That's we maintain the list, that spreadsheet that's color coded. Uh-huh. That is the current list.
Okay.
It would have designated alternates if that had been the case for this past time. And it has been a few years, probably 2 or 3 years since there were either alternates added intentionally or a full cohort. We've been working with vacancies for a couple years.
Okay.
I mean, on the students in terms of who might be graduating, that's something that we could basically kind of know, right? I mean, you can't always know if somebody's going to graduate after 4 years, but that's what I'm just wondering ahead of time, you know, before saying, yeah, let's do this, how that will affect the students who are on there now, you know, who may not be here. Is that something that's difficult to know? Do we have that information?
I don't currently have that information, but I think it's definitely viable to, you know, just to give a note of kind of how many students we have in this grouping. Now we have 14 students as part of that total 28, I believe it is, number. So they make up about half. So it's important that we understand their availability. So this would be something where if we are able to approve vote and pass to make this recommendation and the UA accepts it, then we would obviously have to do the due diligence to say to all of these folks, and this is again the staff and faculty, sorry, the staff and student group. The faculty group is not one, correct me if I'm wrong here, Gina, that we would need to do this for, because that group has already been vetted and they have their own process by which they would handle that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so it's really just the staff and student cohort that we would need to ensure we would make the offer for them to extend out to 2022. And then if they're good with that, then we're there. Actually, no, I guess, you know, as I'm looking at the spreadsheet, the list here shows the staff have been assigned through 2022. Is that incorrect or? And this is where it gets a little fuzzy, like who are we the ones having to make the call and the decision on there?
Oh, no, that was because that was a UA. So yeah, I'll have to confirm. I think this spreadsheet is correct. So they probably have been confirmed, but okay. Of the 18 undergraduate students, originally, the original pitch or expectation was that they would be, it was a two-year term through the end of 2022, which is why it's asterisked. So I don't know, but we can certainly find out. We can cross-reference and find out how many students would be excluded by virtue of their graduation.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be helpful information to have there.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be kind of a rough estimate because some people might have taken time off, you know, we don't know, but I'm just, you know, thinking if it's like, wow, they're all graduating, you know.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely need to get that straightened out to make sure, because, you know, you make a valid point, you know, if we move this forward and everything happens and, you know, out of the 28, we only end up with, you know, 16 people actually moving forward, that changes the model and the scenario. We may need to, and that's where us looking to hire, or sorry, I'm not sure if it's hire, us, you know, get volunteers for the new UHRD.
A point,
there's the word.
Thank I was like, are we getting so, paid for that? Because I'm signing up.
A point, the new members, we may need to ask some who, if they would be willing to shift into this group, you know, perhaps we may need some folks there. And again, that, you know, you have this sort of wiggle room where this is the immediate need. We know this is the volume of need right now. And the new student code of conduct will have a grace period in which it's not going to be day one bombarded with 25 cases happening in the first day. Let's hope again, that's not the case, you know. So there's a little bit of wiggle room there. So
I want to put that into the proposal, like especially if there are going to be people who have already been on the hearing board, and let's say they're reapplying for the new student code of conduct, that would be kind of a good cohort to think about if needed to see if we can call on them.
Yeah.
Because then they don't have to get trained in under two codes because they will already have the experience under the older one.
That's true.
These would be kind of your alternate juror sort of things, as Gina was saying, you know.
Gina, has there ever been any ask of those whose terms are ending, you know, hey, we have a need and we're looking for additional members. Have you considered extending your appointment?
Yes, we have. I don't know that it would be, although this is a new year, but we wouldn't extend the appointment. It would just be, you can renew because you've done it before and we want you to stick around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as in that regard, then would we perhaps want to include in what we recommend to the UA the option for current and expiring members to be able to opt into, say, a 1 year appointment that would end in with this kind of new group? So again, perhaps taking this group that's about to end their appointments and say to them, you know, in addition, we would like to offer a 1 year appointment that would continue through the current code of conduct timeframe that would end in 2022. Again, we're in a gray area, so we might as well see what we can do to make it effective. Any thoughts or consideration there?
Well, my thought on what we were kind of moving towards was the thought, I thought Gina had said something like that you either knew or expected some of the people who were rotating off to be applying again. And that if that were the case, that those are the people who, if they're applying again to be new under the new student code of conduct, mm-hmm. that perhaps our plan could include, if needed, that those people who are applying to be under the new code but have experience under the old code could be kind of alternate or, you know, available.
Yeah.
Well, to step in if we don't have enough people from, you know, from this group that we're thinking about extending their year, offering them an extension of the year. That's what I was thinking about, as opposed to building in another layer of appointments.
Gina, any thoughts there?
The only thought I had is, since the new student code is completely new and no process has yet been set up, that I think it's important to draw a hard line, just so that there is a cohort that's dealing with the current campus code of conduct, and then whatever happens, there might be a new process even for how those people are engaged or appointed. We simply just don't know at this point. So I was looking at it procedurally with bolster the, you know, to the point of, we don't know if there are going to be enough students to maintain the whatever hearings might take place under the current code of conduct. So bolster that with outreach to people whose terms might be ending. Ask them if they would, you know, maybe make up that alternate juror pool, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And then as the procedures and as the new student code of conduct pool is generated, let that be completely separate, so that it's pretty clear.
So if I can restate, so make sure I understand correctly, there could be an option. And hi, Christina, thanks for joining us. And Vin, I didn't welcome both of you. that we would look to solicit for the members whose appointment would be ending and after finishing their 2 year appointment, and asking if they may be interested in being an alternate on what will be this current code of conduct cohort, as I'm speaking to it. And that, you know, instead of asking them to apply to be the new code of conduct and kind of moving into it, I think that's a good thought there, Gina, kind of a clear delineation, because you can only imagine, you know, having heard cases and been a part of this for some time, you suddenly might be thinking to that, you know, in kind of past time frame, and might be hard to move in and usher in that new student of code of conduct and not use that in your framework. And so having a clear delineation. So again, it would be those ending their 2-year appointment, we would really solicit for them to ask if they would be interested in becoming an alternate in this new cohort that we would be extending through 2022, that would be hearing all of the cases under the current code. And then our actual solicitation for applicants for the new UHRB would be a fresh and clean sort of process of bringing in new people to usher in the new student code of conduct. Does that kind of encompass what you had said there, Gina? And do folks feel that's a good way and approach?
The only thing, and I think you said it exactly right. The only thing that I don't want to imply is that one can't do the other, that, you know, whatever the new process is for the new student code, a person could decide and then perhaps be selected. I mean, but they shouldn't be excluded from tossing their hat in the ring for the other once that process is rolled out. But okay. That would be up to the selecting body for the new code.
Yeah, that was the thought I had as you were describing it, Brandon, that it's really, I think, important not to bar anybody from applying under the new code.
Yeah, so I think, so Nick is going to be joining us here shortly. And so I think what's important is that we have something on the, to be able to make a motion to speak to. And so I want to make sure we get kind of a clarification on where we're at. I think I can speak. I think we're feeling fairly comfortable in sort of the process that I had, unless anybody thought otherwise. I think we're feeling like it's a good approach. And hey, there's Nick. And that we would be looking to make a recommendation to the UA that we take all current appointees that have only a 1-year appointment and extend that appointment to a full 2-year term to May of 2022 to hear all cases as it pertains to the current code of conduct, and to recommend that we begin our seeking of applications for the UHRB that we, as we typically would in this time frame, with the caveat that those applying now would be looking to begin their appointment in conjunction with the new student code of conduct, which would be happening in the fall semester or prior to, dependent upon Ryan Lombardi's office and the timeframe that's set forth, and that group would hear exclusively, be trained on and hear exclusively new student code of conduct matters, and the cohort that we spoke to about extending into a full 2-year term would hear exclusively current code of conduct matters. If folks feel like that statement encompasses what we are speaking to here. All right. Nick, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a while since we've done any voting, so I kind of forget the process here. So I'm not the one that motions this, right?
No, but you can entertain a motion.
I can entertain the motion. It's been a while.
I'd like the motion for what Brandon just said.
Do I have a second?
Second.
You have a second? All right.
Who seconded? Sorry.
Heather.
I did, Heather.
Thank you.
By Heather. Thank you, Gina. So all those in favor, if you
can. We need discussion on the motion.
Oh, sorry, yes. Great, thank you. Now for discussion. Yes, Risa.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of it. My only question is the way that you just described it sort of dropped out. I thought what we just talked about in terms of, or maybe I just didn't understand the way you said it, that there are people who will have had 2 years done and the possibility of those people also serving under the old code. I thought that's what we had just talked about. And I thought what you had just put in the motion was only the people who had the 1-year appointment offering them an extension.
That is Correct. Good question. If we wanted to encompass both together or kind of have two.
Oh, okay. If there's going to be another motion. Yeah. I mean, if there's going to be another motion, that's fine. But I just wanted to raise it because it wasn't there. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Risa. Any other questions or discussion? With that, I would entertain a motion to vote. All right, I think we're ending the question. Now we can, all those in favor, yes. Press the yes button, which is in the reactions. There we go. We have 5 yeses, no nos, and no abstentions. Okay. All right. We can go ahead and remove the yeses. And with that, then I would as well entertain a motion to discuss the option for those whose appointments would be fully completed in May 31st of 2021 to allow for those to have the opportunity to either apply to be a part of the new student code of conduct or an opportunity to become alternates on the current code of conduct cohorts.
So moved.
We have a second. So moved by Risa. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick. All right. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, press yes. We have 5 yeses, no nos, and no abstentions. All right. And I thank you very much. And a special shout out to Nick. I know you had something else. I really appreciate you jumping on so we can get this matter resolved to be able to make a recommendation to the University Assembly. It's greatly appreciated.
Of course, yeah, glad to help out. Sorry I couldn't make it to the full meeting. I'll definitely be able to be there for all of our next meetings this semester.
Great, great. And Nick, if you have something else and you need to go away, don't foresee any voting matters moving forward. The remainder of the meeting, I would ask for just, and we don't have to go the full 6 o'clock, just to discuss a little bit about thoughts or questions or ideas around Ryan Lombardi's visit and anything we want to begin to prepare. He, just to clarify and let folks know, Ryan Lombardi will be visiting us on April 30th to come in. Again, obviously the intention there is to speak to us about the new student code of conduct and hear his vision. Along with hear our perspectives of how that new student code of conduct can be moved forward. One subject as well to discuss is how we might best get ourselves up to speed on the differentiating factors between the two conduct codes, because I think that's really important for us, and I will acknowledge my own lack of a clear and definitive ability to speak to the differences between the two. So those are the only two other topics that I had here. And obviously in light of Nick, you jumping in, if there's anything if folks would be opposed to it, offering Nick an opportunity to speak before he might have to step away. I see no objection to that, Nick. So if there's anything there you might like to speak to before you did have to step away, welcome that. Nick's kind of, I think he's traveling and driving, so let's not interrupt there. But why don't we move to that? Folks, any thoughts, questions? And I can kick it off unless somebody else has something.
Sorry, Brandon. Sorry, yes, go ahead. I didn't have anything else to add. I just wanted to say I have to go back to class, but I will see you guys soon.
Thanks again, Nick. Thanks for stepping out. We appreciate it. Well, maybe I could ask and apologize for putting Christina and Vin on the spot, but one of the things that we had talked about in a previous meeting was the ability to understand the differences between the two and how best to go about identifying the key differentiating factors between the two documents. You know, understanding, I know there are some things that we know were clear changes, but getting a good understanding is if there's a working document that might help us. If I don't know if you and the OJA have been working on kind of those differentiating factors, but maybe I'll shut up and let you speak a little there, Christina.
Sure. So Vin and I have started to work on a project to compare some of the differences between the code. I think it's meaningful to us because we've touched on the old code, right? I think that for new students, they won't know a difference, right? And so when we transition over to the new code, we will have to create, you know, new letters and new websites and all those different pieces. But it is more so, I think, an internal exercise. And, you know, we're happy to share some highlights. I don't necessarily want folks to think that it is going to capture every single difference, right? Nor do I think that that's the most productive way to go about that. But we're happy to share some of our work. I will say it's just an ongoing process. We're kind of doing it on the side, right, as we manage the regular caseload pieces. So if there are specific things that I think this group wants to take a look at or wants to focus on, we're happy to share what we have created that exists. But I certainly want to also review it with Susanna too, as our team continues this work moving forward, identifying the key differences and notating the specific areas of particular, I think, areas that are noteworthy for folks like you all to know would be helpful. So sorry, that was a little ranty. My brain is starting to shut down. So
no worries. I know, and I appreciate you being here. I know these are our cases, so glad you were able to join us. Susanna, did you have anything to add from your perspective there?
So we haven't actively started creating a document of any sort that does a comparison. I mean, I think we have a couple of internal things that note the big changes from when the revisions were taking place. But we've been looking at it through we're starting our hiring process now in the office. And so we've been looking at it sort of just exclusively on the hiring piece at the moment. And so I think we're definitely going to be doing sort of a deep dive into it at some point, but we're just have, as the JCC's office has been really just focused on purely just the hiring pieces of the new code right now. So we haven't yet done like a deep dive into the substantive differences yet, but plan to.
Yes, Risa.
Yeah, so in terms of Ryan's visit, it seems to me that it would be very nice to ask him an open-ended question of this sort. What does he see as the key differences between the two codes? And to ask him to talk about that as a general matter, but also specifics about what he sees as different, because I think that everybody has a general sense, and he probably has a general sense of the differences, but I'd like to know from him, you know, what he sees in comparing the two and what his expectations and perhaps hopes are, but also to really get something a bit like nailed down on that instead of generalities. And then also in line with that, I think it would be useful to hear from him, what does he see as his role in the day-to-day operation of, you know, his work with the code and the various personnel who are involved in the code, as well as his kind of more general position in the new code.
Thank you, Risa. I think those are two very important points. So obviously important to hear Ryan's perspective on the differences between the code and then understanding his role. In having conversations with Ryan, not to speak for Ryan, but provide my perspective on what was said, that, you know, he really is looking to learn. You know, a lot of this has not lived within his purview. And so he does acknowledge the need to learn and understand the process and what it will be and how it's moved forward. So, but I think, you know, to your point, Risa, it'd be really helpful for us as he visits to provide those two perspectives and information, for sure. And Jen, I know you have to head out at 5:30. I didn't know if you had anything you wanted to speak to, or I'm sorry I put people on the spot. I'm just trying to be mindful and provide space for folks.
Brandon, you know, if I had something to say, I'd say it.
This is true, Jen. Thank you. Well, let me ask this of Christina and Susanna then, perhaps. Is there an opportunity, you know, often in these committees we might invite special guests to do, a presentation. I'm not putting you on the spot for a presentation, but would there be an opportunity to kind of work in conjunction and provide us with, each of your perspectives on the difference between them? And obviously understanding you may not have time to do a full and thorough deep dive of everything that's different about the two, but what are the key and really impactful changes from your perspective? I think that might be really helpful as we then speak to Ryan and Kevin about, we still have to figure out what our role is, right? As the CJC, we still have to identify, obviously the URHRB is an important piece of this, and it's not an encompassing requirement to have a committee that's all that we do is the URHRB. I think there's more important aspects that we want to get a good understanding of how best we as the CJC can provide impact and guidance and suggestions as it pertains to the codes. So I'd ask the question of Susanna and Christina. I didn't know if you had any thoughts there.
So just to understand your question, was the question if our offices separately could sort of come up with what we see as the key differences and just have that ready to talk about at this meeting on the 30th? Or is the suggestion that together we come up with the key differences?
And that's a great question.
Have something to speak on.
I would be open. I think the only thing I would say is that we would, and from my lens, it would probably be better to not have that be at that meeting, but to provide us in advance of that meeting those perspectives, because I think they will help us in the conversation.
Gotcha. Okay. So like sometime in advance of the 30th, just emailing them to the members of the CJC, is that sort of what you're picturing?
Or the meeting, we do have, we have two meetings between now and Ryan Lombardi's visit. We have April 6th, April 20th. So we have two meetings between now and then, so there would be an opportunity to present those at one of the next two meetings.
Christina, you can go ahead.
Can I make the suggestion that maybe Suzanne and I touch base offline? I want to be really conscious of everybody's capacity. Mm-hmm. Right now, the semester is flying by, and it's a hard time. And I recognize the importance of this, but I think it makes sense for Susanna's office and the JA's office to kind of take a lead at looking at some of these pieces. But the timeline piece is something that I just want to connect with her to see what makes sense. What can we do? How much can we do? So, but we have two dates. We have the question that I feel like the group is interested in knowing more about, and we'll connect and we'll figure it out together.
That would be great, Christina, and I would greatly appreciate that. And again, acknowledging, not looking for a, glossy presentation full of slides and pictures and compare and contrast, but simply, as you've seen in my presentations, fairly informal, sort of your perspectives would be greatly appreciated. So yes, absolutely. I definitely would appreciate it if you could take a moment to decide if that might be something that you would be able to present to us here. Any other thoughts or things that we think would be important in preparation or otherwise? Risa?
It's just a question. We had talked about asking Kevin, right, to, I'm sorry, I just don't remember his last name because I don't really have any interaction with him. What's his last name?
Williams.
Williams, right. Weren't we going to ask him to come earlier than April 30th? Did that just simply become not possible or what?
I will own up that I think I've made it kind of ambiguous as to whether I was, Christina was, or Gina was reaching out to Kevin, because I had reached out to him prior to starting, So probably didn't get a communication. And so maybe providing some clarification as to what might be the best approach here of trying to see. I would agree with you, your question there, that there was the intention of having Kevin join us prior to April 30th. So I don't know if Gina or Christina had any thoughts there. Gina?
I haven't reached out. I can on your behalf and invite him. Just let me know which meeting you'd like him to attend, and we can coordinate that offline and send out the invitation. It may be at his, depending on his schedule, but I can help find out what his availability is as well.
Yeah, if we could perhaps ask Kevin, you know, those dates that I mentioned there, the upcoming meetings, the April 6th or 20th meetings, if one of those might be a meeting that he might be able to attend. And you know, it might be really good for him to hear what we've asked of Susanna and Christina, if they're able to do that compare and contrast, to hear from that perspective might be one option to consider. But I think really, if there's any opportunity for Kevin to attend here and just join in, kind of, even if it's just simply, hi, I'm Kevin, here's what I've got going on, and an introduction and understanding of his role, I think that would be welcome. It does not, again, have to be a formal presentation. And this is something we had voted on last semester, so not something we need to further hash out as far as that regard. But I think that if either of those two dates might work, that'd be great. Thank you, Gina. All right, any other important topics? Well, seeing none, we could end a little early. Yes, Heather.
Yeah, I just have an administrative question. So you said the next meetings were April 6th and 20th, correct?
And I'm looking at my calendar and making sure I'm right. Oh no, those are the university assembly meetings, my bad. Let's take a look here. What is today? Today's the 23rd. And then
it'd be the 13th and 27th.
There it is. My bad. Thank you, Heather.
Okay, thank you.
You're like, wait, I'm already, that was on my calendar. The 13th, so that's for Christina and Susanna as well. I've been a mess with these. My calendar is just a nightmare.
That's right. And then Ryan's is still on that Friday morning.
Yes, that's right. Because I had left the 30th on there because we had already arranged the meeting with Ryan, and I didn't want to have to go back. And it's not something where there'd be like it's not going to be a quorum meeting where we need to vote. So it's really those who are able to make it can make it, and hopefully as many as possible can. Yeah.
Thank you, Heather.
Very much so. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I'll send Nick another huge thank you. So we were able to get that quick quorum to make that vote happen. And so I will then be passing this information on to Logan for the recommendation for the University Assembly to review and assess. And then once we have that reviewed from the University Assembly, we then sort of the harder work begins as we look to fill the UHRB and working with Gina and the Office of the Assemblies to get that to happen. So, all right, well, I think we can adjourn early. We aren't in quorum, so we don't have to have a motion here. So I think we can call it an evening, give everyone a half hour back. Go maybe, there's still a little bit of light out there, so go enjoy it if you can. Thanks all.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Everybody.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.